Research, a polling firm based in Ottawa. He says the Trudeau government boosted the numbers of new immigrants each year, which created significant stress on the housing market, healthcare, and education.
And I think for a lot of Canadians, although they're still generally supportive of immigration, they felt that these exceptionally high immigration rates was too much.
Nano says inflation also hit Trudeau's popularity. He says many Canadians believe in a progressive agenda.
But if you can't pay for the rent in the next 30 days, or if you're struggling to pay for the groceries this week, that's another issue that they want to hear from politicians.
Which Nano says Trudeau didn't address. Author Stephen Marsh says Trudeau became the face of a too liberal agenda.
He was Captain Woke, and the world has really, really turned against wokeness in a very, very deep way.
But Carleton University's Hampson says Trudeau's departure comes as President-elect Donald Trump is threatening to place 25% tariffs on Canadian products, which could cripple its economy.
The degree of domestic political uncertainty, along with the uncertainty in terms of what's going to happen to the economy. This couldn't be a worse period to be changing the leadership team in the country.
Trudeau will stay on as Prime Minister until the Liberal Party chooses a new leader. Jackie Northam, NPR News.
In Syria, a small Muslim sect used to hold a lot of sway and power. They are the Alawites. The deposed dictator Bashar al-Assad and his family hail from the group, but since his fall, this once privileged sector has become increasingly fearful and has been targeted by some Syrians seeking revenge for the regime's crimes. NPR's Hadil Al-Shalchi reports from Damascus.
Dozens of people, mostly men, gather in the open courtyard of a school in the heart of this Alawite neighborhood in Damascus. An organizer is trying to convince the crowd that the government now in charge wants peace. Now is the time to turn in any arms and ammunition you have, he tells them. Community leaders are abiding by calls from the new interim government, Hay'at Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, to disarm the nation. The rebel group that overthrew Bashar al-Assad wants all armed factions in the country to disband and come together under one Syrian army. And HTS is calling on civilians to disarm too, and give up their personal weapons. Many here willingly did. Volunteers poured through the turned arms. There are guns, assault-style weapons, even a few grenades, and lots of ammunition. One volunteer clears bullets from a magazine. He says he's writing all the serial numbers and type of each weapon. Amal, an Alawite resident at the meeting, is scared of the armed rebels that patrol her street. They should give up their weapons just like we're giving up ours, Amal says. She's afraid to give her full name. She says she fears for her security as Alawites are being targeted. The new interim leader, Ahmed al-Shara, has repeatedly said this government will protect all minorities, but troubling evidence is starting to show otherwise. Multiple videos have been circulating recently showing violence allegedly against Alawites. Like this one last week, where a man praises God for burning an Alawite's home. And another shows masked men dressed in black HTS uniforms. The video shows them kicking a row of men believed to be Alawite. NPR could not independently verify the videos. Security analyst Sarmad al-Bayati says Syria's new leaders must consolidate power quickly to stem sectarian violence, which is looming large these days. If a government is formed that includes minorities in ministerial or decision-making roles, then perhaps things will calm down, Bayati says. He says if the sects don't all sit at one table, the crisis will prolong. Bayati is an Iraqi expert and has seen this type of violence escalate before after the fall of Saddam Hussein. There, Sunni and Shiite Muslims bitterly fought. Even the wrong name could get you killed in certain regions. At the community weapon retrieval meeting, Amal remains skeptical of HTS's pledges of unity. She says she's harassed daily at neighborhood checkpoints manned by HTS rebels. Every time I'm told you can't come, you can't go, Amal says. Her neighbor, Sleiman Mahmoud, feels the threats. He dreads the endless questioning, too. Are you a soldier? Were you in the regime's army? Are you Christian? Are you Alawite? Mahmoud says he's asked. Until the harassment ends, he says he won't believe the new government in Syria now will truly keep everyone safe. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Damascus.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News. When it comes to evolution, people often talk about the survival of the fittest. But a new study in the journal Science suggests biologists might be overlooking an important factor, luck. NPR's Jonathan Lambert has more.
Within a population, individuals differ in traits that make some a bit better at getting food or finding mates than others. Ultimately, this creates some winners and some losers in terms of survival and reproduction, says Matthew Zippel, a biologist at Cornell University.
Everywhere we look, outcomes across populations are unequal. And in natural populations, there's a huge amount of variation in starting position in terms of an individual's environment and its genetics.
Biologists usually focus on the genetic causes of that variation, since genes of the winners get passed on to the next generation. But sometimes, creatures just get lucky. That made Zippel and his colleagues wonder,
what is the role of luck and what is the role of competition in leading to those inequalities in adulthood?
Often, a lucky break is just a one-off. But other times, a bit of early luck can launch future success, says biologist Michael Sheehan, also at Cornell.
Individuals who start succeeding early tend to keep succeeding.
While some inherent trait might account for this early success, in many cases, it's contingent on luck or factors that an animal can neither control nor predict, like it just so happens to get to prime territory before a competitor. But figuring out how much of that success stems from luck, genes, or an organism's environment is tricky, since all vary so much in nature. So, says Zippel,
we wanted to know, what if we create a society where everyone starts out with the same genetics and access to the same resources and the same environment in early life? When those individuals grow up into adults, do they look different? Do we see that inequality develop?
The team created the society using genetically identical mice, which they tracked from infancy through adulthood in outdoor enclosures. But there was one key variable.
Males in our system compete with each other to form territories. And females, as far as we can tell, do not compete to exclude each other from space in that same way.
The researchers found that when competition for resources is high, getting lucky early in life really matters.
Males, they pretty early on start to diverge into really high quality and low quality males, or males that are gaining access to resources and males that are being excluded from resources. But we don't see that same pattern pan out for the females. They kind of all stay about the same quality the whole time.
Females also get lucky, but that luck doesn't make or break an individual's fitness like it does when competition is high. That's a really exciting finding, says Robin Snyder with Case Western Reserve University.
As you dial up competition, it's amplifying the effect of these small moments of coin flips. Did you get it? Did you not get it? Did you manage to gobble up all the resources, and then that allows you to continue to gobble up all the resources.
It's hard to say exactly what these results mean outside of the context of this experiment, but for Snyder, it underlines an important point.
Even if you have something special about you, you're particularly vigorous, you have great genes or whatever, that is a necessary but not sufficient trait to have to be exceptionally successful. You also have to be lucky.
Acknowledging and studying that luck, and when it counts, might lead researchers to a fuller understanding of how evolution works. Jonathan Lambert, NPR News.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
And I'm Juana Summers. There is big news today out of Guantanamo. The Biden administration has transferred 11 detainees from the U.S. military prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and sent them to Amman, which has agreed to help them rebuild their lives. It is a major step toward President Biden's goal of trying to close the U.S. detention facility during his final weeks in office. And NPR's Sasha Pfeiffer is here with the details. Hi there.
Hi, Juana.
Sasha, start if you can by just telling us who was released.
They are all men. They are all from Yemen. They were all captured in the aftermath of the 9/11 terror attacks. And the Defense Department says they are all former Al-Qaeda. They were all held for more than two decades without ever being charged or ever put on trial. Eventually, there was a national security determination made that they were safe to transfer out of Guantanamo. All of them had been approved for transfer for at least 2 years, and one as long as since 2010, but they were still held. The problem partly was that they could not legally go back to Yemen because it's considered a failed state, so the Biden administration had to find other countries to take them, and that involves lengthy, complicated negotiations, a lot of politics. Finally, they got Oman to agree to take them. Oman will offer them jobs, housing, possible family reunification. In some cases, they will face security monitoring, travel restrictions. The end result is by transferring out these 11 detainees, Guantanamo now has only 15 men still held in prison there.
Why did the Biden administration decide to do this now, this last-minute flurry of transfers?
It really has been a flurry. In fact, recently, in past weeks, there were four other Guantanamo prisoners transferred out. There's at least one more transfer in the works, so it really is a scramble. Now, I do want to note that these Yemenis